Ladies and gentlemen, good evening, and welcome to a very important conversation. We are live from the Chippewa and Eau Claire rooms of the RCU corporate headquarters in downtown Eau Claire. Our crowd, our live crowd, is so robust we had to take up two rooms. So thanks for being here, everybody. Thanks for being here on the radio. The robust conversation is about how the future of Eau Claire will look in relation to activities venues. Large, small, medium, we're going to need them all. The title of our conversation tonight is Creating Major New Event Facilities in Eau Claire, a Clear Vision Community Forum. My name is Al Ross. I'm with Wisconsin Public Radio. I host, and here comes a selfless plug, Spectrum West, which airs Fridays from 5 to 6 on 88.3. With us this evening on our panel, to my right, and I know it's always fun to, when you're watching a football game, you try to know which side the team is going to. So to my right is Linda John, Executive Director of Visit Eau Claire. Linda, welcome.
Thank you.
To Linda's right is Ben Richgruber, Executive Director of the Eau Claire Regional Arts Center. Hi, Ben.
Hello.
How are you? And all the way down there is, yeah. Ben turned around, so to his left is Mike Rindo, Assistant Chancellor for Facilities, also Executive Director for University Communications at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. Our intent is to go until 9 o'clock. We're going to take a break at 8, but the discussion will be determined, its length anyway, by the conversation and the input on the part of our live audience here at the RCU corporate headquarters. Also, we're going to, through the auspices of Volume 1, give you the opportunity to participate online. The online address is volume1.org/eventcenter, volume1.org/eventcenter. Tom from Volume 1 is here, and he's doing all the engineering of that. By the way, I want to make this announcement. If anyone in Eau Claire wins the Mega Millions tomorrow, they have to donate a portion to the to the venues that we're talking about. Okay? Okay. So let's get this show on the road. First, I'm going to call on Mike Rindo, and Mike is going to spotlight the history of this entire concept and the very important Clear Vision process. Mike?
Thank you, and thank you to Wisconsin Public Radio for carrying this live to Volume 1, for also participating in a live streaming, and to RCU for providing the facilities for our use tonight. But especially I want to thank all of you, our fellow citizens, who have come out to engage in this discussion, because that's what Clear Vision truly is about. Clear Vision is engaging our community for the common good. Clear Vision Eau Claire is a countywide initiative to develop a collaborative vision for Eau Claire, and our mission is to engage all citizens to reach a common goal and purpose. And this is exactly the kind of engagement that we're very pleased to see. The background on this is Clear Vision Eau Claire started in October 2007, when several hundred citizens from the area came together to really do a strategic visioning for what they want our community to be 20 years hence. And not just to say, what do we want it to be, but how do we get there? And out of that came the notion that one of the things that we need to do as a community is to really address events facilities. We do have events facilities in our community. They function. But are they what we really need for us to better our community going forward? Not only for the citizens here, but for others who might be interested in coming to Eau Claire for events, or perhaps even moving here long term. So we've got a PowerPoint presentation that we'll begin with tonight so you can see the work that's been done. And we'll walk you through that, and we will welcome then, of course, your comments, because we're here tonight to, first of all, give you some information, but most importantly, to hear what you have to say about this, all right? So here we go with a PowerPoint presentation. The first one, the purpose, we formed a committee, the purpose of which was to conduct research and provide recommendations regarding arts and event venues in Eau Claire. Now, when I say research, you'll hear from Ben Richgruber and from Linda in a moment that it's not really research in the traditional sense of scientific survey. It's a very different process. But we did do that research in order to come up with some preliminary findings. The need for such facilities were identified in Clear Vision Eau Claire's final report from the initial discussions that occurred. There were three of the six KPAs, or key performance area groups, that identified the need for improved or new community events facilities. And those three KPAs were civic engagement, economic development, and quality of life. So we formed a committee, and it was led by Ben and Linda and I. And the committee members represented a broad coalition of community stakeholders, including arts organizations, artists, businesses, tourism stakeholders, local government officials, and representatives from UW Eau Claire. We utilized some additional resources. There was a white paper that was created in 2008 that was developed by a group of community leaders that were outlining the possibilities for events facilities in Eau Claire. And that was actually happening about the same time that Clear Vision was engaged in those discussions. And that white paper really took a look at what Eau Claire has for current community event facilities, what condition they're in, whether they really serve their purposes, and then compared those to similar facilities in communities of similar size in the Midwest. I would invite you to get a look at that white paper. It is posted online on the Clear Vision website, and that's clearvisioneauclaire.org. If you look under latest news, it does have that white paper, and that will give you an idea of the work that was done by that group that helped inform our group as we began our discussions. The other thing that was occurring at the same time was the Good Life Cultural Plan, the Good Life Cultural Survey in Eau Claire. And so they did a great deal of survey information, and while we were careful not to cross-pollinate, so to speak, between our group and their group because we had different purposes, we did inform each other as we went through this process so that we weren't duplicating efforts. And this group concentrated more on events facilities, and Good Life Cultural Survey group really concentrated on the whole aspect of cultural life in Eau Claire. So that is the setup to the work that we did, and now we're going to get into the process that we used in order to gather our information. Ben.
All right. The methodology we used was something new and different than has been done in the past with this type of facility specifically. We used the Center for Democracy and Citizenship's concept and philosophy of public work. What that means is effective democracy begins with the conversations citizens have about their collective interests and the choices they make about the kind of community they want. So it's very grassroots. It's bottom up. It's not some random developer wandering into town and saying, you need this, and give me the money for it, and here's where it's going to go. It's really about us talking about things, the conversations that we have on our, you know, front porch with our neighbors. Some of the key components and concept, key components of the concept and philosophy of public work. Public work is sustained, visible, serious effort by a diverse mix of ordinary people that creates things of lasting civic or public significance. So it's moving forward, and it's totally transparent. Our meetings were run a little bit different than many other meetings. You know, there was no meeting after the meeting allowed. We had to put it on the table. If there's something you wanted to say, you had to say it to the group. And that made sure that things were open and honest, and it really created a great platform where everyone was welcome to give their thoughts and ideas. The ultimate goal is a flourishing democratic way of life created through a different kind of politics in which citizens take center stage. Politics can get tricky. So we want to make sure that it's not bogged down in politics. It's not left, right, Democrat, Republican. This is about us as citizens doing what our community needs, and it's a different kind of politics. The belief that citizenship is best seen as work, whether paid or unpaid, that has public meaning, lasting public impact, and contributes to the Commonwealth. So it's our job as citizens here to do this work. We're not going to sit back and let someone else do it for us. If we want our community to be what it should be, it's our job as citizens to make it be that. consensus that people are creators of the world of ideas in which we live and work, and this world of ideas shapes our sense of possibility and our range of action. So it's up to us. We're going to come up with these ideas and move forward with them. Premise that public works transcend party lines and partisan differences. Diverse groups come together to create parks, schools, and libraries, to organize civic holidays and movements of social reform. So that echoes what I had mentioned earlier. The process delivers practical results that are workable, useful, and sensible. That's the good old Midwest practicality. We're not just going to come up with something crazy. We want to make sure that what we do can work. So the early stage of the process, we had to learn the Humphrey Institute's public work process, power mapping, house meetings, and the understanding of self-interest. Power mapping is a process by which you decide who are the stakeholders in this, and you start with that circle and then broaden that out so you're talking to the right people. House meetings. As I said, our meetings were run in a little different style. So at the beginning and end of each meeting, we actually critiqued the meeting. How did it feel? How did it work? Were you able to say and do what you felt was important for that meeting? And the understanding of self-interest. Sometimes people hear the phrase self-interest and they think of that in a bad way. And it's not a bad thing. We all have a self-interest. If you're a family person, then if we want to get you involved in this process, we might want to show you the benefits to your family. If you are someone who's really inspired by the environment around us, then there might be ways to involve that. So it's really just getting to know each other as neighbors and citizens to find out how everyone can be involved in different ways. So it's the good side of self-interest. So we developed our stakeholder list, and from there we came up with surveys for one-on-one interviews. Like we said, these are conversations you have with your neighbors. So the process uses what are called one-on-one meetings, where you sit down with someone and chat. And it is just that. It's just getting to know you. It's getting to know about yourself, what your interests are, and how you might be interested in helping move any particular project forward. This isn't just a facilities thing. That's our focus tonight. But this process has been used for many things around the community in the last 2 years, and it's really gone well. Committee member assignments to conduct these community leader interviews branched off from the one-on-ones, and then subsequent surveys for community residents and visitors. So we took the information that we gathered from these one-on-one interviews and conversations and turned that into a survey. Now, again, like Mike said, this isn't scientific. We didn't go after specific demographics to make sure we tied in with census data. We just wanted to make sure that we were talking to everyone we could as neighbors, as a community, to say, this is what we want, this is how we feel. So we got a lot of action, and Linda's going to tell you about those key findings.
Great, thank you. As Ben and Mike mentioned, the process was pretty in-depth, and it had a lot of steps to it, and it's basically the findings that I'm going to share with you are a collection of the conversations that took place during this process. Visit Eau Claire did a lot of the conversation work as far as the general community and the residents. We did that by going out to area festivals and events with the Mobile Visitor Center a couple of years ago. And an example of some of the events that we were at were Phoenix Park, Farmers Market, the Gus Macker Tournament, Summerfest, the Sounds Like Summer Concert Series, and Carson Park Fourth of July Celebration, as well as Festival in the Pines. As some of that information started to feed back, the committee realized that these were all outdoor events, and it might be important to get the perspective of people who attend indoor events as well. And so then we took really a different time of year and attended events at the State Theater, including the Lori Line concert in December and Festival of Trees. So we did have that mix of events that we were gathering that information from. And again, those general resident surveys that we took were really a compilation of the feedback we got from the one-on-one conversations, which were much more in-depth and open-ended, where we identified 50 people in the community who had some direct stake or leadership role and sat down with them and open-ended said, what does Eau Claire need in this area? And just gathered that input. And then we took that and put it into multiple choice questions for the general resident surveys. So the responses on that are really interesting. The first question that was asked is, what type of events would you like to see in Eau Claire that are not currently available? And so there's two columns. The first column is the one-on-one conversations, open-ended, and the second are the general survey responses. Both of them, at the top of it, came back as big-name concerts. 26% from the one-on-one surveys and 28% from general surveys. Then the second in line from that was large conventions for the one-on-one, cultural events, Broadway shows, and elevated sporting events. With the general survey respondents, it broke out a little bit differently, but not too much. It was big-name concerts followed by Broadway shows, cultural events, elevated sporting events, and large conventions at 12%. We found the next response area very interesting. This is probably the area that had the most difference in the two groups. And the question was, does Eau Claire currently have competitive facilities for these events? And on the one-on-one survey respondents, perhaps the people who are more directly involved with these types of things, 7% of those people said, yes, we have the facilities we need. 93% said no. On the other side, the more public resident side, 56% said, yeah, we got good facilities for this. We can compete in this area. And 44% said no. So that really was an area that we realized there was a difference in maybe the in-depth knowledge of being closer to the issue, maybe an area for public education as well on really what the state of some of these facilities are in. Then we went to the next question, which started to break down the different types of facilities into three areas: arts center, convention center, and what we're calling a major events center, where you would hold concerts and major sporting events. So in that area, the first question was, Eau Claire needs an arts center that includes theater facilities for the performing arts and studio and gallery space for the fine arts. Both came back very high. The one-on-one survey respondents, 85%, said, yes, that's a need for Eau Claire. General survey respondents were 75%. The next one was, Eau Claire needs a convention center that would provide conference and exhibition space. The one-on-one survey, 76% said yes. General respondents, 82% said yes on that one. And then Eau Claire needs a major event center that could host sporting events, concerts, and other large-scale entertainment. The one-on-one survey respondents were at 74%. And again, very high general survey respondents on that at 86%. Then we asked kind of the same question in a different way. We wanted them to prioritize those three facilities. I really want to point out that we never approached this as one over the other from a standpoint of the Clear Vision Facilities Committee. We were hearing loud and clear that these are all priorities and very important. So never did we approach this as a point of pick one, but that of the three, where are the priorities within the community? So with that, we looked at Arts Center as top priority, 33% from the one-on-one survey respondents, 22% for the general survey respondents. Convention Center being top priority was 29% of one-on-one survey respondents, and 50%, which was for the general survey respondents, Convention Center came out at the highest as far as priorities. And then for major events and entertainment center, 38% for the one-on-one survey respondents and 28% for general. Of course, we were quite sure that once we all agreed that this was a neat idea, the next question would be, how are we going to pay for it? And so we've been around the block on this a couple times. So we threw out, well, actually, the one-on-one survey respondents fed that question with their ideas of how these possible funding sources could come about. And so for the one-on-one survey respondents, their ideas were private funding, 36% threw that out. Public funding of some sort was 28%. A special tourism tax, 20%. And partnerships within the community was 16%. And then on the general survey respondents, again, we had a survey of choices for them. 42%, which was the highest percent of that, came back at philanthropic contributions, followed by private funding at 23%, public funding 21%, and a special tourism tax 14%. So similar funding mechanisms and a little bit different mix of support for those. And then we did throw out, because there are destinations throughout the country who have found way, when you talk about a special tourism tax, many cities have a lodging tax, which Eau Claire also does. But there's some cities that have looked at other tourism-type taxes to fund facilities, such as a food and beverage tax or a special retail sales tax. So we just threw that out to find out if there might be a level of support for something like that. So the question was regarding support for a 0.5% tourism sales tax to help fund facilities construction, could you support that? On the one-on-one survey respondents, 82% said yes, 11% said maybe, 7% said no. And on the general survey respondents, 41% said yes, 32% said maybe, and 27% said no. So on the yes or maybe category, on some sort of a special tourism tax or funding mechanism, yes or maybe combined was 93% on the one-on-one surveys and 73% on the resident surveys. So we took all of that information and got back together and came back with some recommendations for moving forward. And so I'm going to turn it back to Al to go from there.
Just momentarily. We're going to get to Mike Rindo with those recommendations, but I want to remind people that you're listening to a live discussion, Creating Major New Event Facilities in Eau Claire, a Clear Vision Community Forum. We are live from the RCU corporate headquarters in downtown Eau Claire. You're listening to Ideas 88.3 WHWC. You are invited, as the evening progresses, to weigh in with your questions and comments. We have a live audience here. Let them know we have a live audience here. See, there we go. And you are also invited to weigh in, if you are listening, with a question or comment at this internet address, volume1.org/eventcenter. We are going to be posting some of those questions and comments thanks to the good folks at Volume 1. So now to Mike Rindo, and you have some recommendations, the result of what we've been talking about.
So based on the extensive discussions utilizing the concept and philosophy of public work, the Clear Vision Community Events Facilities Committee recommends and conclusively validates that the Clear Vision Eau Claire Final Report Action Plans of Civic Engagement, Economic Development, and Quality of Life Committees calling for creation of community events facilities. We conclusively validate those initial findings through our one-on-one discussions and strongly recommends Clear Vision Eau Claire undertake a timely and broad-based effort to engage the greater community to achieve that goal. We specifically then came up with these next steps. Beginning in fall 2011, Clear Vision will begin conducting a series of high-profile public discussions as part of an educational component of event facilities needs. We did that starting in the fall with many of the arts groups, in fact, with all the arts groups, with the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild, not all, but the major ones, Chippewa Valley Theater Guild, Eau Claire Children's Theater, the Eau Claire Symphony, Chippewa Valley Symphony, excuse me. We also met with the Eau Claire Regional Arts Council. We met with Visit Eau Claire, and we also had a conversation with the innkeepers of Eau Claire. So all of those groups, we said, these are our findings, and we want to know from you if we should continue this process. And they all said, yes, proceed. And so we took that back and said, okay, you know, we have that information. Now we'll go to the next step. And that was to conduct something similar to what we're doing tonight. We talked about the Idea Lounge format. We ended up at a little more of a formal type presentation because we have these wonderful media partners that we're working with, facilitated by the committee members, provide information and photos regarding existing facilities and competitive facilities in other communities. That's that white paper. And did we bring any photos tonight, Ben?
No.
No photos tonight. Sorry. You can't see them on the radio anyway.
No.
We'll do that in the next meeting. And then finally, gather community input and answer questions. We took this to the Clear Vision Board of Directors because it's an ongoing entity, and they said, yes, we affirm this, proceed, and that's when we started going out to the other arts groups. So that's where we are. Now, let me tell one little story here as we go into the public discussion. UW-Eau Claire recently named the basketball court floor in Zorn Arena after Ken Anderson, who was a longtime basketball coach and had some just terrific basketball teams through the decades. And as part of that, we pulled out some material from the 1972 Sports Illustrated article talking about how UW-Eau Claire had come on the national basketball scene by storm and really became this national basketball powerhouse, playing not only smaller colleges but larger colleges and being very competitive. And in that article it said, 1972, the Blue Golds currently play in 3,500-seat University Arena, but they hope to soon be playing in a new 10,000-seat arena. Only 40 years ago. So this is not something that is new to our community, but we really believe through the Clear Vision process that we can go from the information that we have gathered, presented to you tonight, having these public discussions, to being able to come up with a plan and then move forward with implementation of that plan, whatever the plan is. We don't know what the plan is up here. That's what we're here to hear from you tonight, here physically, to hear through your ear for the radio.
Yes.
That's a radio thing for Hal.
Thank you.
Okay, so that's where we are, and we can take it from there.
All righty, thanks. Let me remind people that our panel consists of the gentleman from whom you just heard, Mike Rindo, Assistant Chancellor for Facilities and Executive Director for University Communications at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. Also, Linda John is here. She's Executive Director of Visit Eau Claire, as is Ben Richgruber, Executive Director of the Eau Claire Regional Arts Center. Before we get to public comment, I have a couple of questions, which... my
surprise,
prerogative
surprise,
because
yeah,
I have the microphone and they don't right now. You know, you've talked about, you just related the 40-year story. Most of what I've heard from people, most of what I've seen already posted on the Volume 1 website has to do with, it's about time, you know, boy, this is exciting, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So in the beginning of your process, did you talk about and analyze why it didn't happen in those 40 years and say, or within any amount of time, why hasn't it happened yet in Eau Claire? Did that spawn any new wrinkles in how you were going to go about doing things as you spoke? Because it did. It must have reached dead ends. It had to have, because it's been brought up often throughout the years. Any history about that as to why that hasn't happened before now?
I'm not sure we analyzed the why it didn't happen as much as the how we might make it happen. And I think the way that Ben outlined the process, which is very different than what has occurred in the past, and knowing that that process has been successful elsewhere, it was our hope that that would be the result here, but we really had to go through the process. Everybody on the committee, and there are a number of people here tonight who are on that committee, had to learn those different techniques that Ben talked about. And we spent actually the first several meetings not really going about the business of figuring out what it was we wanted to talk to people about. We spent the first several committee meetings learning how to go about that process. So I think that that's probably the biggest difference, although I'm not entirely familiar with how the past efforts really were undertaken. But from our sense, talking to people, this was a very different process.
Mm-hmm. And maybe there's someone here who has been a part of past processes, and we'll get to you in a minute, but so keep that under your shirt, ready for the microphone, because I just find that intriguing, because it has been talked about for so long. Let's say that you know, you are holding these kinds of events and you have done your formal canvassing. Let's say that the general public has ideas and they want to contribute, as is the public work concept. How do they do that between these large meetings? Do they just contact you guys? Do they call, visit Eau Claire? How do someone has this great epiphany and says, here's how I think you ought to do it. The general public input is important. How do they do that between these kinds of events?
Well, Linda's cell phone number is 715.
No, that's part of why we engaged Volume 1 specifically with this process. They're okay. Very good at engaging community. Volume 1 plug here, because mm-hmm. I'm a big fan. This community is what they're all about, and it was just a natural partnership. Yes, definitely contact any of us with questions or ideas. Our emails are all out there. But really, volume1.org is where we're trying to keep everything, so it's in one spot. So go there if you have comments or ideas. Hopefully tonight sparks a lot of great imagination. So when you've had a chance to process that, get it out on that website, put some ideas down, and then we will certainly be digging through all of that and hopefully learning and growing from there. So we need public input. That's what this is all about.
Okay. Yeah, and we're back to that old adage where there's a will, there's a way. Obviously, there's a will, and everyone agrees that it's probably about time we find a way.
Well, and it's up to us to make it happen. I mean, part of what has – the stories I've heard, you know, I'm not from here, so I just hear stories of why this didn't work in the past, and it seems to be that it comes from the top down, and people, I don't want to be taxed for that, I don't want to pay for that, I don't understand why that should be there, and it just wasn't explained, and it wasn't a grassroots thing. So I think that we've done, hopefully, a good job of turning that process upside down, and this is truly what the community wants. This is what we've heard over and over again. So now our goal is trying to figure out how to make it happen, and it needs to happen through us, through these conversations. Someone else isn't going to come in and do it for us, and frankly, knowing some of us in Eau Claire, if someone else came in, we wouldn't want them to tell us how to do it. We want to do it our way.
That's right.
So that's what this is all about.
Let's talk just briefly before we go out in the audience about some blunt facts. Now, we talk about current facilities. I have seen adjectives like aging, obsolete, inadequate. So that puts a different twist on the word current. Conditions of current facilities that we hope to replace. You, Ben, with the Eau Claire Regional Arts Center. Let's talk facts. Let's talk how it is.
The Eau Claire Regional Arts Center is what it is. It was converted from an old vaudeville and theater. The original theater opened up in 1926. It is 86 years old this year. 2 months ago, turned 86. It was a wonderful party. We had cake. It opened as a vaudeville house, and vaudeville houses were very, very different in their needs compared to modern theatrical productions. Somebody came in, they did their song and dance, and they left. Now theater brings in three semis worth of stuff and hangs it and flies it, and it's ridiculous and amazing all at the same time. And we don't have the footprint or the foundation even to do that. So it started as a vaudeville house, became a movie theater for many years, and then in the early 80s it was converted into the current Performing Arts Center. And these local arts groups do an amazing job with what is frankly an inadequate space. Swing by tomorrow and I'll give you a tour backstage. The Eau Claire Children's Theater is in there right now with Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. And the way they use that backstage space for storage, for costumes, for other set pieces, it's the most amazing live-action game of Tetris you will ever see, to try and get all those things to fit into that small and tiny space. So while, yay, it's good, it challenges our creativity, it's also holding us back as far as what we're able to offer. When I program for the Arts Center for our season every year, you don't see big musicals touring through. Some might be in the right price range, but they could only unload one semi and leave the other two full in the alley, and that's not worth us bringing them in because we can't see the full show. So there are a lot of things that we just cannot offer that the community wants and the community is getting used to because so many other places are able to do this. So we're hindered by that. I mean, the stage can't get much bigger unless we break down into Farwell Street, maybe connect it with the library and, you know, the heck with traffic.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty landlocked place. It's literally falling apart in many places. We've got a nice hallway in the basement we like to call Rat Alley. It's underneath the sidewalk, ceilings leak. I mean, we've got a lot of duct tape holding that baby together. So when you come and see a show, it looks awful pretty. But if you want to step backstage sometime, I'm ready to give you the full tour, and you'll be amazed.
That's probably a good idea. I mean, if you haven't done that as part of your challenge, it's a good idea to open her up and let people
Yeah.
come through and view the duct tape.
Rat Alley, I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. I want to see that. Linda John, how does what we're talking about impact the Visit Eau Claire message that's out there?
There's a few different levels that the tourism industry is affected. I'll start with just inadequate facilities, and that really for conventions it's more of a space, a size issue, where we're missing out on a lot of convention groups that would love to host their convention here in Eau Claire, but we just don't have facilities large enough to accommodate them. And the sake of sharing information, over the last 10 years, we just started keeping track. We started a report called the Too Large to Accommodate Report. And every time a group called us and said, we want to come to your community, and we started having the conversation about what their facility needs were, and we found out we wouldn't be able to host them because of the size, we put them on the report. And over a 10-year period of time, that report is pretty long, and there's about $40 million of business that we've had to bypass, and that's business that came knocking on our door. If we had facilities, we would go out with an aggressive sales effort to recruit groups. So that's just business that is being left on the table, going to other communities. So from that standpoint, it definitely is a lost opportunity for Eau Claire. And then some of the things that we're talking about with the arts and events, facilities, that type of thing. We always say that things that are good for a community, for the locals, work just fine for visitors too. You know, we don't have to have anything special or separate just for visitors. And so these types of facilities that add to quality of life are the exact kind of things that we would be promoting to people to get them to come here, spend their money, and help grow our economy. And so it impacts, you know, the Visit Eau Claire message from the standpoint of what we have to offer. We think we have a great community. There's so many natural assets and that type of thing. But having said that, there's so much more we could do with the right facilities.
Mm-hmm. Al, maybe I can say a couple words about the university's facilities. Ben's got Rat Alley. We've got the Sandbox. Zorn Arena was built in 1952 when UW-Eau Claire had 750 students, and today we're at 11,400. Care Theater, also built in 1952. There actually is a room with a dirt floor in it in the adjacent campus school that our theater department uses for storage of props, and it's a dirt floor, and you open up the door, and it actually kind of goes from you got to duck to get to the end of it, but it's very neatly kept. I mean, I really give our theater music and theater arts students a lot of credit because it's very, very neatly kept and organized. But that's what it is. There's no shop space. The costume making is done in the dressing room of Care Theater, and there really is a very, very small stage. And then our new facilities, which are in Haas Fine Arts, Gantner Concert Hall, Riverside Theater, Phillips Recital Hall. Those were constructed in 1970, and nothing has really been done to them since that period of time. And Gantner Concert Hall's got that lovely fly space above it, but it has standard-sized doors. So you've got this fly space, but you can't load in any kind of sets. So it really does not function well whatsoever. And so those are some of the things that we struggle with. And when we bring in our larger events for the community, Zorn Arena really is not a great place to have those kinds of events acoustically. You know, when President Obama came here when he was a candidate in February of 2008, they announced that the doors would open at 5:30 a.m. for a 1 p.m. appearance. And we had people from the doors of Zorn out to Garfield Avenue, all the way down Garfield Avenue, all the way up the hill to the top of the hill, waiting in line in queue so they could get in because they knew that we had such limited capacity. Then, of course, when Bon Iver did their welcome home concert or coming home concerts in December, we had to do two concerts because we don't have a large enough facility to be able to handle one. I mean, they were both sold out and both wonderful, but those are some of the limitations that we have as well.
UW-Eau Claire is pretty progressive. I mean, you have some very impressive building projects going on right now. Where does arts and entertainment stand in priorities in the University of Wisconsin system as it pertains to new facilities?
Well, we just completed a 20-year facilities master plan for the university, and the Board of Regents of the University of Wisconsin system accepted that master plan in December. In conversations that we've had with UW system, with our colleagues there, they say Eau Claire is widely recognized as having some of the best programs, and clearly our music programs will stand up against anybody's, not only in Wisconsin but in the nation. But they say also is widely recognized as having some of the worst facilities for the arts and music in the UW system. And the word that was used, or the term was used, that they clearly are not collegiate. In our master plan, we have identified a new arts center as our top priority. And we also have identified in our master plan that UW Eau Claire, the intention is to work with the Eau Claire community to develop a new arts center that will serve both the university and the community. And it could be developed. We do identify some land adjacent to our existing fine arts building that it could be an addition. It could be freestanding on the Water Street parking lot. Or we say it could be elsewhere in the community if that works for both the university and the community at large, as long as it's in close proximity to the university so we can get people back and forth. What do we mean by close proximity? Well, we already share facilities with the community at Carson Park, at Hobbs Ice Arena, Bollinger Fields. Those are roughly, give or take, a little bit a mile from central campus. So if you draw a mile ring around campus, that we would say close proximity. And then the other thing that we identify in our master plan that would be something that we would work with the community with or on is a new multipurpose major event center. We do not identify any land on campus to construct that because we just simply do not have a large enough footprint to be able to do something bigger than what we have in Zorn Arena. And so we would be looking to do that on land that is not currently owned by the community.
Are there any other
by the campus?
Are there any examples of other campuses and facilities that spell out that partnership you were just talking about, the potential? Are there any that we know of?
I think we'd be plowing some new ground there. You know, when the Board of Regents received our master plan, and they were on campus in the fall of 2009, and we presented to them the preliminary findings of the master plan at that point. But also we had Mike Huggins, the former city council manager of Eau Claire, come and talk to the regents about the partnership that the university and the community already have in existing facilities. And we had just successfully completed the Hobbs Ice Arena project. And that really was an example of the university working with the city and with some other entities, the figure skating club, youth hockey, the schools, to enhance greatly a facility that was already there, and we were able to make much better than what it was. And the Board of Regents were excited by that. They said, that's just a terrific model, and this is something that we would like to see continue. And so when we presented the master plan to them in December, they were very pleased to see that we had additional shared facilities that would benefit both. But it would be plowing new ground. But we do think that we've been able to make the case that that's a way for us to go because, you know, the chancellor announced this week that he's leaving, but when he came here and throughout his chancellorship, he said that Eau Claire is only big enough to support a quality facility in any area, whether it's an arts center or a major event center or a hockey arena. We can only support one really good one. And why would we as a university want to construct one and then have the community construct another? Why not work together to construct something that neither one of us could do alone? So that's how the university is looking at this from a master planning perspective.
I think that makes it more exciting and more worthwhile. A reminder that you are listening to Creating Major New Event Facilities in Eau Claire, a Clear Vision Community Forum on Ideas 88.3 WHWC. We're going to momentarily head out into our live audience. We are broadcasting from the RCU corporate headquarters in downtown Eau Claire. You can also log on to volume1.org/eventcenter and post questions and comments there. All right. Here I go. And I'm going to the first guy who... By the way, if you do not feel like talking on the microphone, Grace has some cards, and you can jot down a question or a comment, and she'll pass it up to us or to me, and we'll address it that way. Oh, that feels good to stand up. Okay, so let's mosey over here to a gentleman who had his hand raised when we were talking about the old days and why it hasn't happened to this point. First name's fine unless you really want people to know who you are.
I'm Brady Faust. I'm Professor Emeritus of Geography at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. I came to Eau Claire in 1971. I was on the Plan Commission for much of the 70s. And there was a committee that the Plan Commission formed to study the feasibility of an arena back in the mid-70s. The only person I remember being on it was Dick Larson. We used wood-burning computers, and we did all our calculations in VisiCalc. And let me just point out something else. For all the 80s and 90s, or the 80s and 90s, and there are only three site location companies that dominated retail and feasibility site location in the country. And my company, Matrix Research, was one of those three. And we did things like we did the feasibility study for RCU's Golf and 93 branch up to several casinos that were $500 million facilities. So I have some expertise in this. And you know, people can want it all they want. They can want these things, but it has to be economically feasible. And the numbers we ran then showed it would be economically feasible. You got to know, is there enough business to support the money you're going to spend on this? And I dare say if we ran those numbers again, we would find that the numbers are even better now than they were then. But as soon as this idea came up, the naysayers came out in force. I think they were bringing them in from out of state. And if you read the Leader Telegram, you know, it's going to raise taxes. We don't need this. And that's why it really died. And the original focus of this was to compete with La Crosse, because La Crosse was building this. You've got to have public support. You've got to have public vision. And you've got to have political. Well, I don't think there's a difference between public and political. But you've got to have support behind it. You've got to, first of all, prove it's economically feasible. It doesn't matter whether people want it or not. Is it economically feasible? And then you've got to have public support behind it, because this is not going to be built by private companies. Even the Packers needed public support. So, you know, it's going to cost something, and we have to move forward to convince the public that that money is money well spent, which I think it is. Thank you.
How long was that process before it died? And was the process similar to what's been going on here for the last year or two?
Well, there was a lot of public meetings on this. You know, we did a very, very rigorous, given the equipment we had at that time and the models we had at that time, a pretty rigorous study of the economic feasibility of this. But it just died because of the, you know, sort of the naysayers coming out saying we don't want our taxes raised a dime, and you know it's not something that Eau Claire really needs.
Has the concept just been catching dust ever since then, or has it arisen a few times?
It's arisen a few other times, exactly the same thing happened. So,
good, thank you. All right, question or comment from
Brian Larson. I was going to add some history. Gantner Concert Hall seats just under 600 people. And when it was in design, Chancellor Leonard Haas wanted it to be 2 to 3 times as big. And he had hoped to get Eau Claire County to join with the university in creating a larger space, because the control over the budget and the size of the facility is really with the Department of Administration in Madison. And Eau Claire County was not the least bit interested. And so that went nowhere in 1970.
Yes, sir. Sam Murdy. I have three anecdotes and a question. I'm a member of the Eau Claire Male Chorus, I think the longest-lived arts group in Eau Claire. We host every 4 years or so the Big Sing. I know Claire, Linda's aware of this. It's always hosted in Zorn. We bring in 1,200 people, 400 singers. I'm going to say flat out, we have inadequate facilities for that. Second, more close from a date standpoint, Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra is hosting Mahler's Second, for those of you who don't have your tickets yet, on May 12th, I believe it is. Normally, Mahler's Second would be performed with 200-300 singers. Given the space and some of the things that Mike mentioned, we simply don't have the space for it. So we're going to do it, and we're going to do an admirable job of it with 100, 150 singers. Limitation there as well. On a business note, and this strikes more to the economics, believe it or not, I work in the investment industry, have a more difficult time recruiting people to Eau Claire. In fact, we have to pay people more at a senior level to come to Eau Claire than they get paid in Minneapolis. One of the things that we hear from them consistently is the lack of culture in Eau Claire. Now, we know that there isn't a lack of culture in Eau Claire, but it speaks to facilities. It speaks to theater. People say, I want to go to the theater. I want to do these things. Then the question I have, and it speaks to the other gentlemen's discussed earlier, is this idea of the public-private investment partnership that Mike was mentioning. You know, we all know in this room what the big objection is going to be, the perception, misperception of it's going to cost us something. The economy is still weak. We're having all sorts of issues budgetarily, school board, city, so on and so forth. We need to be able, I believe, to demonstrate that this isn't going to cost people a lot, or that the people in the community are going to be willing to step up to do their fair share, private citizens. But I'd be interested, from Mike and the board's perspective, how you see this public-private partnership ultimately unfolding from a timeline standpoint, from an asset standpoint, so on and so forth.
Well, I think that you're absolutely right. If this is going to occur, it has to occur, and our findings really support this, through a variety of funding sources that would include public money, philanthropy, and also private investment. How that all plays out is really dependent on, I think, partly the kind of facilities that we go ahead and pursue. I can tell you that with the university saying that it is a willing and a partner, it's also an able partner. And so if we can find a way to work together to come up with operating agreements where the needs of the university's programs are met along with the needs of the various art groups or others that would want to use these facilities, we believe that we can go to the state of Wisconsin and say, give us some of the money, and we'll find a way to bring the rest of the table through philanthropy and through private investment. And so that's one possible scenario, depending on the kind of facilities that we're talking about. But clearly it's going to take that multi-pronged approach. There's no one entity that's going to be able to afford to do this on their own. I don't know if you two have anything to add there.
You're correct.
I'll just add one other point. I think it goes back to the what's different this time as opposed to past attempts. And I've only been through the last 20 years of this, so I don't have nearly the rich history of some of you, but the university's position and leadership on this is different this time. And that's made a big difference, I think, and will make a big difference moving forward.
Okay. I don't see any hands. Yes, I do. I do see a hand. On my way over there, I have a question submitted via card, and this is for Mike. Any new location requires tremendous space for parking. Where would this be most workable? Any thoughts to redevelopment between Water Street and the river?
Tremendous space for parking. I think part of that depends on what kind of facility you build. Take a look at the state. You know, what do you have, 1,100 for capacity?
Yep, 1,100 seats.
There's not tremendous parking. I mean, there's a ramp nearby, but it's not like people can't find a place to park. So, but if you're talking a 10,000-seat multi-purpose event facility, major event facility, you probably are going to need more significant parking. And that then, of course, you'll have to find a location that would support that kind of not only footprint of the building, but then also parking associated with it. In terms of anything along Water Street, we did identify in our master plan the Water Street parking lot. And if we were to do it on the an art center on the Water Street parking lot, we would construct a parking ramp immediately next to it as part of that project. But parking ramps are pretty expensive.
Okay, again, this reminder, we're going to be taking a break at 8 o'clock for some NPR news so that everybody can stand and stretch. And you can formulate your questions during that time because we're only about four minutes away from that. You have a question.
Hi, I'm Susan McLeod from the Chippewa Valley Museum, and it's already been the Good Life Project has been mentioned earlier. That was a project done collaboratively by the museum, the Arts Center, the Public Library, the Children's Museum, and representatives of Clear Vision. It was a different kind of study, as Mike was pointing out. It was not a facility study, but it had a lot of opportunities for people to make comments, and there was a huge outpouring of comments about facilities. Now, they're not all talking about the same facility. People have this whole range of interests. For people who'd be interested, I brought some clippings from our data of the comments that people made relative to facilities and so forth. I'd be happy to share those. And I think part of the significance simply is that when we weren't particularly talking about facilities, people wanted to talk about facilities. Also, I think there's a disconnect, which you see in the other data, between what people understand about what it takes to operate and make such a facility successful. So just it isn't just an issue of facilities that you don't have Broadway shows here. You have to have people who understand what the tickets might cost and so forth. You have to have an ongoing operating program. So I think that's certainly part of the next step, is to have a model for that and how that would work.
All righty. Thank you. And she does have that information here. I think we do have to we have 4 minutes left. Question for Linda, submitted on a card. Most other Wisconsin cities our size offer full-color publications to draw people in. Is that something we have?
Well, it's something that we did for several years. Okay. And in the age of the internet and technology, we have relied primarily on our website and mobile website for information. However, we do believe that people, when they get to a community, need that printed piece to hold and tell them what to do, as much as, you know, their smartphones. So we are a strong partner with Volume 1 in that sense, because I think everyone here probably knows they've got the best print piece out there with up-to-date information. We could never do better. Why would we try? So we have a strong partnership with them, with a presence in every issue to help support that publication. We distribute that to visitors when they're in town.
Okay, good. I think, is there a quick question that I can get to? Oh, I see. Yes. The top one, is there a list of possible locations as of today? I was going to get to that after the break because, you know, there's lots to talk about, but once you get over certain hurdles, then site becomes the biggie. Who wants to tackle that? Can you do it in a minute? And if you can't, then we'll stop and take a break and we'll address it when we come back.
I think I can do in a minute, not necessarily all the sites that were suggested to us through our discussions, but I can give you some themes that were pretty common. We should try and utilize the rivers. We should make sure that people can get in and out. So ease of access. We need to think about downtown and revitalization. Others said maybe think about near major highways so you can get in and out. Proximity to eating establishments and entertainment establishments. And what am I missing? Are those the main ones? So those are the themes that occurred throughout. Oh, and parking. Yeah, you had to, back to the parking question. You have to be able to park and get in and get out. So if you start thinking about those kinds of conditions or criteria, then you can start thinking about, all right, what match those? And it'd be interesting to hear your comments after the break.
From the and public. If you did miss anything, I'm sure it'll come to you during the break.
I'm sure.
Thanks. Thanks, Mike. You're listening to Creating Major New Event Facilities in Eau Claire, a Clear Vision Community Forum. We are live from the RCU corporate headquarters in downtown Eau Claire. This is Ideas 88.3 WHWC. We're going to take a break for news, after which we'll come back and we'll talk more about our topic of interest tonight. And while you're away, don't forget you can log on to volume1.org/eventcenter. That last question came through that channel. And you can post your questions and comments there. I'm Al Ross. We'll be back.